Hi, this is Della Wrightson. I'm the clinical nurse specialist at Levine Children's Hospital. So for our overview of where we are right now, we have done our protocol review and revision. We got input from all of our end users and have standardized that and now educated on it. We have begun our work on multidisciplinary education of over 300 staff. Currently, our one item that's still in production is our creation of a parent education booklet, and we are also beginning to do some outreach to the area drug treatment centers. As far as the challenges that we've encountered so far, with a system as large as ours, our biggest concern is not leaving anyone out. I mean, we've had to reach out to our labor and delivery, our newborn nursery, our pediatric floors, our NICU and our progressive care nurseries, the treatment centers in the area. I mean, all the physicians, our NMPs, house staff, as you can imagine, that's a lot of people to touch. So that is definitely one of our challenges. Along with that, one of the challenges for such a large organization is the multiple approval steps that have to happen for anything we want to undertake, particularly things like our policy and our parent education material. We may have been done with it 3 months ago, but it's still in process in terms of being approved and finalized. Let's see. Some other challenges that we have is making sure that the data is gathered and input cleanly and timely, because no one of us, even though we're a large team, is here 7 days a week. So, you know, we always need to make sure that we're touching base with each other and making sure that all of that is taken care of. And along with that is knowing when we have a new patient that needs to be started. We have had a few of our patients come down to us from newborn nursery, and so making sure that we realize they've now been transferred and they actually are here for NAS observation and need to be input is a little bit tricky. So we're always on the lookout for that. Some of the barriers that we've encountered, definitely I think one of the things we want to focus on is overcoming the inadequate education that mothers may receive. And that's part of the outreach we're trying to do with the treatment centers and also including our labor and delivery and newborn nursery staff. A big barrier for us is an environmental one, in that we do not have a way or a place that mothers can board if their infant is just going to be observed for the 5 days. Once mom goes home, the baby has to be transferred down to us. And then, you know, we've been looking at really where is the best environment to continue to care for these babies, whether they're just being observed or whether they're getting treatment. Like I said, there's really, once mom leaves, the only place for them to go is to our neonatal progressive care unit. And, you know, as we've learned in some of our collaboratives, there are hospitals that dedicate entire nurseries just to babies in withdrawal. You know, do they do better if it's a single family room as opposed to a large one-room nursery? So that's just something that we're, you know, we wonder about. As far as some of the solutions to the things that we've run across, we really want to look at trying to have ongoing, consistent education that we can provide to the obstetricians' offices and the treatment centers. We really feel that if we can bridge that community gap, we will be doing everybody a better service. As I talked about trying to figure out the appropriate environment to care for these babies, we would like to investigate if there is an option for us to create our own NAS nursery, if you will. Or getting a place for these mothers to board. And then really for us, like I said, one of our things that has been in the works for quite a few months that we'd like to put to rest or to bed would be our parent education handout, and hopefully we'll be doing that shortly. In terms of improvements or failures that we've seen, within our staff, when we started our protocol, there was some confusion over how to dilute the very small doses of methadone, and that has required some ongoing staff education to make sure that that happens without an error. When we started our protocol, we had two different dosing regimes for the start of treatment, depending on whether or not we knew mom had methadone and what dose of methadone she had been getting. But, I mean, really, I think that became – there were lots of times we didn't know, and it didn't really seem to make a difference, and it was kind of cumbersome. So one of the things that we did was just we eliminated that and went with a single starting dose for our treatment plan. And lastly, our third improvement was that when we started, we did not have a standardized secondary medication if methadone wasn't enough. And so we have chosen and implemented clonidine as our secondary medication.
Questions? Sounds like y'all are doing a lot of different things. One question. On the creation of the parent booklet, do you have parents involved in that?
Yes, we did reach out to our Family Advisory Council members to help us with that.
Great. And would you be willing to share that once you get it completed and approved?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thanks so much. That sounds like great work. Okay, Mary, I think you're on the line now, Central Carolina.
Yes, I am. How are you today?
Good, how are you?
All right. You know, we're a small community hospital, and we don't have a whole lot of volume. So the main reason why we joined this team was in order to grow our learning base and what we could do for the small volume of kids that we have. And so the first thing that we looked at was our existing policy and realized it was sorely lacking in many, many areas. And so we pretty much just tore it up and threw it away and started over again and did a lot of research on what these kids do need. And found that some of the practices that we were doing, such as, you know, the swaddling and the quiet rooms and, you know, the darkened rooms and things like that, we were doing in practice, but needed to figure out what we were going to do if we had kids that needed medications and things like that. So we've worked on a new policy, and that is getting ready to go before committee in May. The meeting that was supposed to be in March got postponed. And we also realized that, you know, everybody talks to these folks and tell these moms and dads what's going on, but we didn't have anything where everybody was talking out of the same side of their mouth. And so you get a little bit of this person's opinion and a little bit of that person's opinion. So we knew that we needed staff education, and we also needed patient education. So we have concentrated on putting together some patient education so that they would have a handout that they could read and take home with them and understand better. And that, too, will go with the policy in May to the committee for approval. And then once all this is approved, then we will combine that together and start getting some education to the staff. So what have been our challenges? We don't have a lot of babies, and so, you know, to learn from them has been, you know, the couple that we've had has been a challenge, and then just the politics of getting things approved and getting staff to change what they're doing is always something that is challenging to, you know, people are kind of stuck in their ways sometimes. And the other piece are these moms don't always want to stay with their kids. We do have what we call a border program here, and if the babies don't go home when mom does, as long as we have a patient room available for them, we'll let the mom stay in their room at no charge to them. But this type of clientele is usually the ones that want out of here fast. And so sometimes they'll come and go, but most of the time they go more than they come. And so that's been hard to get them more involved in their care. Some of our barriers is because, again, we're small, just dedicating the time that we need to this. And our improvements, I think our new policy has the potential to be a whole lot better. It is much more inclusive in what these kids need. And the education for our parents, when you had nothing to start with, anything is an improvement. And so, you know, this is, you know, a multi-page handout. So hopefully these moms will take the time to read it and will learn from, you know, from the booklet and then from what the staff will teach them. And that's pretty much where we're at the moment.
That sounds great, Mary. Would you also be willing to share your parent education brochure?
Sure.
Okay. When I ask this of everybody, what we do is we turn around, we post it on the web so that others can use your resources without having to recreate the wheel since you've already created it. So you're just sharing what you've already done. So, and then it gives the ability of the other teams to adjust it to what their needs are. So thanks for being so willing to share everything. And it sounds like y'all are really coming along on your policy and everything, and that that's going to help really standardize your care.
I sure hope so. We're working on it.
Great. Okay, we'll move on to CMC Lincoln.
Hey, this is Karen, and I'm from CMC Lincoln. I'm going to give you just a brief update of our current activities. So we have been, our multidisciplinary team has been meeting. We are working sort of in tandem at the same time with CMC to develop some education materials for parents. What we were sort of gung-ho in the beginning about starting a medication regimen with these babies. We are also a small facility, so limited with staffing issues became a problem. We are a LDRP with a special care nursery, so we don't have a dedicated NICU or special care nursery nurse. So if labor and delivery gets really busy, we really don't have the staff to be one-on-one with these babies or even anybody to really take care of them like they need to be. So we kind of had to take a step back, and we're currently actually doing a cost analysis as far as do we need to add staff for these babies because we are seeing more of them, or are we going to continue our practice of transferring to our sister facility downtown. So it's been a lot of trial and error. Getting the staff educated as far as scoring, that was a huge eye-opener for our staff. We were underscoring a lot of these babies. And if the baby didn't have a really high score and need to be transferred, we just treated them like a normal newborn. So that's been a big, huge change for us, keeping these babies, observing them for the time frame, just to make sure that they're not exhibiting symptoms when they're discharged. So barriers to our process, obviously staffing issues, and we also have a little bit of a war of worlds between the pediatric hospitalists and the community physicians, just getting everybody on the same page with treatment plans. It's hard for the nurses when some physicians want to discharge and some want to keep babies, and so we're just trying to streamline that process. So we're really working on those barriers as far as solutions to that, just making sure that we keep an open line of communication with our pediatricians and that our obstetricians are on board as well with the treatment of the moms and babies. So we're busy right now, just going to meet next month about a cost analysis with administration as far as, is this something that we want to keep in the hospital, these babies, or these babies we're going to continue to transfer to our tertiary care center.
Will you update us on that cost analysis, what you find out? That's interesting that you're actually going through that process.
Absolutely.
And there's other small facilities that also are transferring, so that might be helpful for them as well.
Okay, sure, absolutely.
Thanks. Sounds like y'all are working really hard as well, and you've got a lot of barriers that you're overcoming. Okay, CMC Northeast.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can.
Kelly Cooley, and I'm kind of filling in for Lydia Nunn. I sit on the this committee with her, and actually we have a pretty large group, but she just got married, so she's on her honeymoon. So I just want to start off by saying that we are so proud of our We actually formed our task force before the picnic committee started, and also before Vermont Oxford, you know, started their initiative. And we, you know, got staff nurses involved. We got, management, the doctors, just a really good group of people to be on our team. Because we've already decreased our length of stay by 8 days in just a little bit over a year. And we feel like one of the main things that's helped us to be able to do that is to standardize, you know, our protocol for, we use morphine here, neonatal morphine for these babies. And we feel like that's been the biggest thing that's helped us is by standardizing the protocol and, you know, getting our docs on the same page about weaning and starting and, you know, scoring and just all that to do with the morphine. So that's helped us a lot. As far as our, we're a 20-bed unit, and as of this Friday, we have 5 NAS babies, so we have a good bit. As far as our current activities, this week we're actually having our annual NICU Skills Fair EIP. Baby, and just kind of refresh everybody's, you know, to our skills fair, and also nurses will score a baby together and see what they come up with. So that's kind of actually what's going on this week. Our challenges that we're facing, of course, is getting the picnic data sheet started. A large volume of our NAS babies mother baby unit, so that they know how to score a baby, and that, you know, we're scoring pretty similar, getting the same education. So sheets are started on their unit, so we're if they forget, you know, sometimes we're having to go back and find those sheets or look up the, you know, information in the computer. So that's kind of a challenge. And then also having a little bit of discrepancy in some of the education that's been taught about excoriation. That's kind of been a big thing lately, is, you know, mother baby scores a little bit differently than we do on excoriation. We've just kind of found this out just through, you know, getting babies down here and finding out what they're scoring for. So we're trying to get everybody on the same page, you know, with just some simple things like that, which could, you know, make their score change. And then also, when we first started this, our task force, we broke off into, like, subcommittees for, like, treatment protocol, nutrition, parent education, staff education, support and discharge planning, and those committees kind of met and talked about, you know, what they could contribute to the task force. And we feel like that's helped us a good bit, too, in doing that, because there's just so much information to get out there. But we do have a parent education pamphlet that we have. That was one of the first things we did, and we would love to share it if anybody would like to look at it, and we'd love to see everybody else's too. And so that's been a good thing, because we pretty much had nothing to give the parents. So that's been a good thing for us. And then also, our barriers to our progress, one thing is we did try to meet with, we met with some outside, like the methadone clinic. We met with those. That was very good. Got really good feedback from them. We also tried to meet with DSS. And one reason we wanted to meet with them is just to kind of, you know, help prevent some of our discharge delays related to social reasons. And it didn't go very well. They really didn't want to meet with us, and they pretty much told us that, you know, there's nothing that they can do about it. So I guess that was a barrier. And then also the same as CMC is overcoming, you know, the inadequate education that moms are given, whether it's from the methadone clinic or OBGYN or their friends or whoever it may be. That's been a big, major barrier for us. It's helped us a lot by meeting with the OB group and talking to them about what they're patients are telling us. And then also, you know, bridging that community gap is something that we, you know, are trying to work on. As far as our, as far as the actual patient and their mom, we have great success in getting the moms to breastfeed. A lot of them think they shouldn't breastfeed, so we've had better outcomes with that. And then also we've had, we have rooms that they can stay in. I mean, usually it's a patient room that our mother baby unit. So we definitely have seen, you know, better progress with our babies when we let the parents, you know, stay in a room or board or whatever you may call it, so they can have, you know, easier access to their baby, be able to be here a lot more. And we do, a lot of times, you know, we tell them that if we're going to let you have this room, then, you know, you have to come see your baby. You have to be down there and feed it every time. You know, you have to be down there holding it. And they also know that, you know, we'll pick up the phone any time and call them and say, your baby's crying and, you know, we can't hold your baby all day. So, you know, can you come up here and hold your baby or can you, you know, whatever it may be. So that's been good for us, too. I think, oh, yeah, our Mamaroo swings. We actually got 4 Mamaroo swings, and those have been great. And I think that suggestion came from this committee, and we really appreciate it. And our babies have, so that's pretty much where we are. Got our improvements.
If everybody will just send any documents that they want to share with everybody to me via email, then we'll get them posted. Sounds like y'all are doing a lot of work and that you've tried to meet with people outside of your own area to help them and just keep trying. This involves a lot of different disciplines and a lot of different settings, and the best thing that we can do is just not give up, but to just keep trying. And there might be somebody on the phone that has some advice for how to get DSS interested, or we might ask them to come on for a webinar. So we'll keep investigating that.
That would be great.
Okay, we'll move on. CMC Pineville is going to do our presentation here in a minute, so I'm going to skip them for right now. First Health More.
Hello, everybody. It's Corinne Cochran from First Health More Regional. I'm a nurse practitioner down here. Let's see. Let me put my notes. All right. So basically what we're doing currently is we're going to be completing our first PDSA cycle in April. And that is to complete everybody through the educational DVD module to ensure inter-rater reliability. And hopefully that'll be done by the end of April. We've thought about, and I think we're going to go ahead with it, our second PDSA cycle will be to do some verification of NAS scores when they're high. We're finding sometimes when the baby score is high, on one shift and then the next shift comes in and they're not really syncing up. And so we decided to look at any scores greater than or equal to 13 to be verified by 2 nurses. It seems a little bit cumbersome at first and daunting for the nurses, but it'll be a rapid cycle PDSA that we'll run over maybe a course of a couple weeks just to see if there's inter-rater reliability when scores are elevated. And I realize there's some bias that could be involved with that, but we're just going to go ahead and do it anyway just to see what happens. We're also working on a family engagement piece. We've had a family educational brochure that we had developed after the Vermont Oxford. That seems to be working well. Somebody had mentioned the parents rooming in and coming up with some kind of a contract of agreement for rooming in parents. Most parents are very wonderful when they room in. They want to stay with their babies, but we do have some that take advantage of the situation and use us kind of like a fancy hotel. So we have in the works coming up with some type of a contract agreement where the parents agree that they'll abide by certain rules and so on and so forth. Our rooming in rooms are not in the unit. They're kind of outside of the unit and down a hall. And sometimes a lot of shenanigans can go on down there. So we're going to try to put a limit to that and make it a win-win situation. We're also working on a discharge NAS toolkit to help transition these babies from hospital to home. Many times these babies get discharged home and that's it. We don't hear from them. We don't really know what happens to them. we assume they follow up with their community provider and everything goes well. But as you know, these babies can be rather difficult to take care of, especially after they've come off medication. So we're trying to put together a resource toolkit for parents that are specific to our community, things that they can call, resources they can use in the community. In addition to coming up with an individual infant care plan for these babies and that we would work on in collaboration with the parent, for instance, the baby has certain times of days that the baby likes to sleep, certain times of day the baby tends to be awake and irritable, things that work well for the baby, things that don't work well for the baby, and kind of get it in writing so the parent can refer to it after they go home from the hospital. And I'd like to see some form of follow-up calls after the baby goes home that we could do as a group to ensure that all of our hard work doesn't go to waste after the baby goes home. Some of the things that have been challenges, you know, the staff education is coming along. It's great in the NICU. However, once you walk out the door and into the labor and delivery area, there's still some challenges out there. One of the things that I really would like to see is having more labor and delivery and pediatric representation on our PQCNC committee here at Moore Regional, and we're working on that also. We're in the process of implementing an educational workshop in June, hopefully, with local addiction specialists to help break down the stigma and the bias towards substance dependency in our population down here, and we hope to put that together for June. Our group, back to what we've been doing, our group took a field trip to the local methadone clinic here. We physically went over there. It wasn't too difficult. It's right across the street from the hospital. And we met with the counselors and the therapists and the people who work there. One thing we were finding is we were hearing, you know, one thing from the patient, and then we were hearing another thing from the people who work at the methadone clinic, and it was almost like the patient was kind of playing one against the other. And so we wanted to get the straight information, especially when it comes to detox, rapid detox after these moms deliver. And they did clarify a lot of things. We made a lot of great connections over there. They're definitely a very significant stakeholder in all this, and we hope that we will break down our silos and be able to work collaboratively in the future to help our patients. So the clinic down here is great. I know there's some clinics around that they refer to them as dose and go. They don't incorporate behavioral therapy, and they're basically operating to make money. We're lucky to have a clinic right across the street from the hospital that, you know, is invested in the treatment and recovery of these patients. So hopefully we can collaborate in the future with them. Improvements and failures. The data collection for the initiative is, you know, we're obviously, as someone mentioned earlier, you know, we're not here 24/7. There's key people who collect data in our unit. I made a easier data collection tool, no offense to Picnic. You know, when you're dealing with a lot of patient days and different patients, you know, each day is one sheet of paper. That got to be very cumbersome and hard to keep track of. So I basically made a spreadsheet that involves week-long data collection, so it's easier for entry and recording the daily information. It has all the same information. It's just in a week snapshot, and I'll be happy to share that with other facilities. If I'll send it to Tammy, and she can post it if she sees fit. I don't think anything else. I think that's pretty much where we're at here at Moore Regional.
Brian, that was a great update, and sounds like y'all are doing a lot of work. So at this point, does anybody have any questions for any of the teams that have presented so far? Okay, we'll go ahead and move into our presentation. And if you have questions, we'll have time at the end of the of CMC Pineville's presentation. I'd like to introduce Tamara Dallas and Pam Fisher as the presenters from CMC Pineville, and they're going to present on their parental teaching for infants with NAS. Tamara?
Hi, thank you. I actually am going to step away from the microphone in just a minute. I just wanted to introduce Pam. Pam is our discharge coordinator here at this facility, and she has really taken a role that did not exist. In a smaller facility, we do struggle with resources as far as medical social work and clinical case management being so busy in the adult and patient population. And when we have babies that have complicated cases or special needs, a lot of times that knowledge and those resources just are not readily available to that team. So she has been instrumental in all of our complicated cases to really look at the whole picture, make sure that the parents have the education they need, the resources that they need in the community. She has been absolutely outstanding in really networking with the community as far as making sure that we know what pharmacist can compound methadone if we actually discharge off on methadone, you know, follow up the pediatricians. About 40% of our babies are from South Carolina. So knowing the difference between North Carolina and South Carolina, she's just been a tremendous resource. So she's very passionate about this. This particular subject and any patient or parent education. So I'm going to turn this over to her. And next slide, please.
Hi. We're talking today about teaching parents to recognize the key signs and symptoms of narcotic abstinence. Because we all know it can lead to shorter hospital stays, promote more effective and successful care of these babies at home, and minimize readmissions. Next slide. These parents come into the system expecting to be judged and shunned by the healthcare team. Often they're on guard and harbor some level of guilt and inadequacy. It's important for the healthcare team to let them know that we're willing to meet them wherever they are in their journey. It doesn't matter how they got to where they are today. What matters is that they are here. Our goal is to help them to have the knowledge and the confidence that will help them to take care of their child. Acknowledgement of the common feelings that they're going to have when we see them is going to be a tremendous icebreaker. A lot of times when I do talk to parents, I first just break the ice and say, you know, that we're not here to judge. And once I say that, it's as if you can see the wall come down, and all of a sudden you're noticing a lot more eye contact from the parents. So try it sometime and you'll see what I mean. We outline what they expect to experience through the first few days, because that is really the most important time. They're very fearful of what's going to be said to them, usually. Full disclosure will help to build this relationship with them. Trust is directly related to the acceptance of the information that they receive. So we introduce the tools that we use to score the baby, as well as the tools that they will use to document their observations. Regardless of the tools used, be sure that they are simple and understandable. These parents are already guarded. Asking clarifying questions will not be easy for them at first. Next slide, please. So I've touched on recognizing the parent's journey. This recognition addresses the white elephant in the room. And this lets them know also that it's not our focus as far as how their baby became addicted to drugs. It doesn't matter to us if the mom was addicted to heroin or if she's addicted to legal prescription medications. But once you get that out in the open, that's the best way to proceed. We encourage the moms to breastfeed unless it's contraindicated. We also teach them about skin-to-skin as early as possible. Both will encourage the parents to take an active role in the care of their baby. This encouragement and support from the healthcare team regarding these activities can help facilitate bonding for the parent and the baby, as well as build that trusting relationship. that we all know is so essential to the team-parent relationship. The establishment of these practices needs to take place prior to the mom's discharge. Before she goes home, she needs to have a fully vested interest in her child's behavior and activities. It will also establish a visitation pattern that we hope is going to be a regular one. If there's any, like I said, any contraindication of breastfeeding, it's also important that we explain this to the mom because she's going to want to know why. Again, full disclosure is very important in building that trusting relationship. Next slide, please. So these parents often have many, many challenges when it comes to visitation. They may have transportation issues. They may have other children at home, and that's usually what we see because they are of childbearing age. Some parents will use that as an excuse, so you need to decipher, who is being upfront with you and who isn't. But that also speaks to the level of trust that you've already established. Let's see. So we prefer the parents to visit for extended periods of time rather than those short 10 to 15 minute stays. The short stays, we all know, can be too stimulating for the babies, and very little patient education can be completed. These short stays also puts the healthcare team on high alert. Simply said, it raises suspicion. We encourage our parents to arrange their visits so that they're present for at least two consecutive feedings if possible. So this is typically a minimum of 4 to 5 hours. Goals are established for each visit, clear communication of the expectations of both the healthcare team and the parent is essential. For example, the parent may need to feed the baby and perform skin-to-skin afterwards. They need to know that that's what we expect. The healthcare team may have arranged for a social worker or the lactation consultant to visit during this time. A lot of times it's better if you let the parents know this ahead of time as well. You'll also find sometimes that when you say the word social worker, they cringe a little bit. They know why. They're not always going to tell us why that is. So making sure that everyone is on the same page ensures that everyone's time is respected and adds a cohesiveness to the parent healthcare team approach. If the parents are available for daily visitation, we strongly encourage them to call for phone updates. Try to be open to that too, because a lot of times parents will call at the worst time. That's also a little bit more education that we try to do in the beginning, in the orientation phase. Let them know the best time to call. That way they're going to get a much more positive feedback from us. Sometimes there are situations that warrant further enforcement of visitation. If parents exhibit a pattern of very short visits or missed opportunities for teaching, the healthcare team will take further action. We'll call the parents and arrange timed visits, and this facilitates purposeful visitation. For example, you need to tell the mom, we need for you to be here to see your baby by 5:30. Your baby will be ready to eat by 6, so we'll support you in taking his temperature, changing his diaper, preparing his milk. We'll show you how to hold him during his feedings and how to burp him. And also be sure and tell them that they need to stay for at least one hour to do this. So if these attempts to engage the parent fail, the social worker will become more actively involved and arrange for a family team meeting. Next slide. So our nurse practitioner, Caroline Ulrich, has developed a great care contract that we use for parents that sometimes have problems coming in when we expect them to. And most of the times, as we all know, these are the parents that could be exhibiting illegal drug use. During this family team meeting, the group will discuss past visitation patterns, why visitation is so important, and the expectations regarding visitation and discharge preparation. This is a collaborative effort, so the care contract is very important. We need to pull these parents in. We need for them to understand why it's so important for them not only to visit for longer periods, but you know why we've got so many people on board now, and why this family meeting is so important. You also need to make it clear to these parents that this is a contract, that if it's not if it's not fulfilled, we're going to have to involve DSS further. Next slide, please. Our teaching goals, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. They need to know how their baby is different from the typical newborn baby. They need to know how to measure those behaviors. Prevention is key, and intervention. They have to know when to get help. Next slide. So basic knowledge. Remember that these parents are still new parents. They've just they just happen to have another additional issue to address. Basic newborn teaching will need to be completed. It will especially be important for the parents to distinguish between typical newborn behaviors such as period of purple crying versus NAS type behavior. In my experience, I've noticed the phrase normal newborn behaviors carries a negative stigma for the parents because they feel as though their baby is somehow not normal. So if we could possibly stray away from normal as opposed to typical, I think you know, you'll see a big difference with that too. I've had to consciously train myself to use that phrase, typical newborn, and parents do appreciate it. We always begin any education with asking the parent what their observations have been and give them the opportunity to ask questions. Once their knowledge level is assessed, we discuss what their baby scores have been and talk through each symptom observed by the nursing staff. What you probably have already noticed also is when that parent comes to visit or when they call in, the first thing they ask is, what have my baby's NAS scores been? A lot of times they really don't understand what the NAS scores involve, what we're scoring on. And for them to understand it, you really need to go through this with them point by point. Each baby tends to have their own set of patterns. Some babies are going to spit a lot. Some babies are going to sneeze a lot. And some babies might have higher temps. So this is all really important to get these parents on the same page and get them in tune with what they need to be looking for and what the nurses have already been observing. These specific behaviors also will help me as a discharge coordinator to individualize a plan for the parents and their baby. Next slide, please. Measuring behaviors, the NAS diary. So as I talk to the parents about their observations and teach them about the tool, I incorporate teaching regarding typical newborn behavior. Many times these discussions will help parents to identify symptoms that their baby is already exhibiting and their signs of NAS. Once we have an idea of the most commonly displayed symptoms, I can help the parents come up with that plan, mostly for calming suggestions and comfort techniques. Next slide. The baby symptom diary is, in a word, it's awesome. We use this baby symptom diary that it's been developed by Dr. Bonnie Whalen from Children's Hospital at Dartmouth. She and the NICU there have been very generous with this information and tools that they use in their practice. We like to use this tool because it's very simple to use. The most frequent symptoms are listed, and you can see for yourself talking about loose stools, loose or watery, time the baby fell asleep, time the baby woke up, sneezes. That's very important because that's pretty much going to be one of the first things that the parent is going to notice. So patterns are going to emerge that when the parents look at this baby symptom diary, it's just going to stick out at them. They love having tools where they can document things on their own. You know, parents love these charts that we give them to document the pees and the poops and all of that. So this is just one more thing that it's very user-friendly, it's very parent-friendly, and above all, this is really in the day and age of health literacy, this is of the utmost importance. Next slide. Prevention and minimizing symptoms. This is really key. You know, once we've educated the parents on various symptoms of NAS, we need to teach them ways to prevent those symptoms from getting worse. Simple things can be brought to their attention, turning down the sound of the TV, not talking on their cell phones so closely to the babies, which also brings up another point. They really shouldn't have cell phones in the room with the baby anyhow. It's not a good thing to do infection-wise, but also it's taking their attention away from the baby when they're on the phone having a conversation. Another important thing is dimming the lights. We have noticed that bright lights, open curtains with the sun coming in, it can only agitate babies and just propels that whole withdrawal that they go through, and it's harder to reel them back in once they get out of control. Another thing we focus on is how to appropriately interact with the baby. Holding and rocking are very important, but it needs to be done in the right way. Instead of, you know, grabbing the baby up and rocking it and patting it on the bottom maybe, which is what most parents typically do, we need to teach them not to do that. We like to teach parents to hold the baby upright and close to their chest and to move in and gently sway. I'm not sure who it was. I think it was Mary mentioned the Mama Roo swings. I would love to see what that.
We actually have three on order. Oh,
okay. So Tamara tells me we have three on order. So I'd really love to see that and see what kind of, you know, rocking motion that does for the babies, because really that swaying up close to the body is what we've noticed is the best and most ideal position. Skin to skin is very beneficial for this population for many reasons. It facilitates bonding, it's very soothing to the baby, and it also provides the parents with a sense of involvement. And by encouraging them to do something like this, this is something that nobody else can do for their baby. Next slide, please. Intervention. Once the baby has been stable on a methadone dose and is weaning down, we offer the parents the opportunity to stay with their baby overnight. We use the LDPR suite that's adjacent to our NICU. So, you know, we always like to be an immediate source if they need us. All discharge teaching needs to be completed before they go out to those rooms. This includes infant CPR, basic newborn care, and really any related education that applies to their individual situation. We always apply a hugs tag to one of the baby's extremities, and the parents are educated on our infant safety protocols in the hospital. For example, you know, always telling them don't leave their baby alone, no visitors in the room. For one thing, if they're going to have visitors in the room, again, it's going to take their attention away from the baby, and the noise could get pretty loud in there. And we also teach them, obviously, never give your baby to anyone without a pink bordered badge. This rooming in experience gives the parents an opportunity to care for their baby independently, but they still have that safety net. The NICU team checks in on the parents every few hours, and we always let them know that we're available by phone also. Next slide. Reinforcing teaching. I love this because I'm so into health literacy and making sure parents understand what you've just told them. This is one of the most critical things to me is if I'm going to do teaching with these families, I have to know that they understand everything that I've told them. But not only that, they need to tell me in their own words what I've told them. And I'm just talking about the highlights, the main things that they're going to take home with them that's going to be the most helpful. The average adult learner needs to learn, needs to hear new information at least 7 times before it's retained. That's pretty significant. So two methods that we use to ensure that the information is comprehended is Ask Me 3 and Teach Back. So Ask Me 3 is a series of 3 very simple questions to summarize the most important aspect of what's been taught. This program has 3 standardized questions that fit any population. Of course, we're asking the parents about their baby in our population. So the information we hope to derive is the knowledge that the parents have about their baby's particular situation. So examples that we would expect to hear are, if I say, what's your baby's main problem? I would hope that they would say, well, my baby's having symptoms of withdrawal. So if I say, you know, what do you feel you need to know about that? They need to tell me. I need to know that if my baby is sneezing a lot, yawning a lot, eating but not staying asleep for very long, things like this, you know, they need to know that these are what's going to be expected of them. It's important for them to know these things because they need to know that if these symptoms get out of control, what to do. And this is part of the discharge teaching also is, you know, signs to call the pediatrician about as well as times to call 911. So Teach Back is another method of verifying that the education was effective. And Teach Back, that's what I was talking about when I said parents need to paraphrase and not echo what I've been telling them. We always avoid closed-ended questions or anything that can be answered with a yes or a no answer. Never say, do you have any questions? Instead, use questions like, what questions do you have for us? Or what questions do you have about what we've just gone over? Next slide. So in closing, the care of these children really does require a complete healthcare team, including the parents and extensive education for these families. When we are successful, these children can go home sooner and parents can perform more confidently in their roles. And this really is what it's all about. So next slide, if anybody has any questions for Tamara or myself or Dr. Mitchell, because Dr. Mitchell is here as well, we would welcome any questions. Thank you.
Pam, this is Tammy. When you have the parents do the diary, is there any way that the nursing staff looks at that diary to see if they agree with what the parent has documented?
Absolutely, and that's a great question. Now, for our babies that are not on methadone and they're staying out on the maternity floor with the mother, we do go over the baby symptom diary with the nurse that's taking care of the mother with the baby. Once the baby is in our neonatal care unit, and obviously, you know, the baby's on methadone, we're scoring, whether it's in maternity or in our neonatal care unit, all of our staff is versed on the baby symptom diary because we have picked out the most important things and the things that are really going to stick out at the parents that they're going to be the first to notice.
And does that become part of the chart eventually, or is it just for the parents to document on and you get rid of after the patient's discharged?
It's a tool for the parents only. Now, the Finnegan tool obviously is part of the chart, But this is in addition to the Finnegan tool, and this is very parent-friendly. Also, what we found is that the baby symptom diary helps us, when we look at what the parents have charted and documented on their own, it helps us to incorporate their information into the Finnegan scoring tool. So it is very collaborative, but no, the diary itself is for the parents, and they can take it home with them. In fact, I always encourage that they take it home with them because it's going to show a pattern a lot of times. If the baby's been discharged home and all of a sudden the baby's having worse symptoms, it's very helpful for them to look at that that diary and look back at the earlier days or maybe even yesterday, and they will notice a pattern of, you know, what they have themselves charted, and they can tell if it's escalating or if it's getting better.
Forsyth is asking a question. Would you be willing to share the parent contract form with the group?
Yes, absolutely. Caroline Ulrich, our nurse practitioner, worked really diligently on that, and she's done an excellent job. I mean, it really focuses on our expectations of the families, and in most families that really are dedicated and involved in helping their child, they will see it for what it is and as a tool to help them get their babies home sooner.
Fitness Plus is an approved Silver Sneakers fitness provider. For more information or to become a member, contact Fitness Plus at 828-326-3680. Catawba Valley Medical Center and Catawba Valley Imaging Center have been awarded a 3-year term of accreditation in nuclear medicine, computed tomography, and magnetic resonance imaging by the American College.
And also, you know, the parents
start that over. I'm sorry, we were a little distracted. So I'm going to have her back up a little bit. The care contract is really one of those things that we focus on, those families who are having a hard time bonding and really having routine visitation with those babies.
Yeah. We try not to use it punitively, but a lot of times that's actually what it ends up being, because it's one way that's worked well for us to get parents in and to learn more about their babies in the way that they need to when they're spending longer periods of time with them. So we will definitely get that care contract to Forsyth.
This is Tina in Greensboro. Could somebody tell me the name of the swings you guys are talking about, Mother Moos?
They're called Mama Roo, and they're
$200, $220.
You can actually get them at Target. You can get them in other places. But they are they're a different kind of swing. It's almost like a papoose type chair.
Okay, thanks.
Mhm. Pam and Tamara, thank you so much for such a great presentation. There was Tara wanted to comment that it was such an impressive presentation of tools for engaging families as partners in care. If anybody has any questions, it's time
Thank
for
you.
Us to end. Just send them to me, and I'll send them to Tamara and Pam and get answers for you. If any of you have any documents that you want to share with the rest of the group, please just email those to me as well. And don't forget to register for the learning session for May 8th. And I think we're done, y'all. Y'all have a good day.
Thank you.